Hi, and welcome to the Owl's Nest podcast. I'm Renee Scuddy. For this episode, I interviewed the president of UCB Pride, Kurt Doan. We talk about how he is involved in the Pride Festival, his most memorable Pride Festival, what surprises him, and so much more. Let's jump right in. All right, welcome to another episode of the Owl's Nest podcast. Today I have with me the president of UCB Pride, Dr. Kurt Doan. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So can you start off by telling me a little bit about what UCB Pride does and what you specifically do for it?
Yeah. So our mission is to provide unwavering support for the LGBTQIA plus folks in Harford and Cecil County. And we do that traditionally and primarily through the festival, which is a one-time offering every year. But in the past 2 years, we've really been trying to focus on other kinds of activities throughout the year, so providing other social opportunities. We also offer two $500 scholarships for community college students, one at Harford Community College and one at Cecil College. And, you know, our hope is that we can, even though it's not a lot of money, that we can help support somebody from our community in their endeavors to go back to school and get a certificate or a degree.
Do you do fundraisers as well?
We think of the events that we put on as fundraisers. So we do sales of our t-shirts, and throughout the year we also do we'll do happy hours periodically and do collections at those as well. We really try to use June, which is Pride Month, as an opportunity to remind the community about the existence of LGBTQIA plus people in Harford and Cecil County, to share information about, you know, historical figures nationwide. And we also use that time as an opportunity to fundraise as well. So this year we set a goal of I think it was $2,000. We only reached $1,000 this year. Our hope was to raise enough for both of the scholarships and then start to work towards an endowed scholarship. But we're going to keep on trucking.
It's a great start, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely a great start. Can you kind of describe the importance of just having the festival overall?
Yeah. You know, I think that being gay, or a member of the LGBTQIA plus community in a rural area, it can be a little isolating. I think when we talk about queer people and queer lives, we often focus on what's happening in metropolitan areas where there's a lot of access to resources and a lot of visible signs that there's community. And I moved here in 2014 with my partner, and for the first couple of years, the only gay people I knew were folks that I worked with. I couldn't get a sense of who our community was. So just offering an opportunity for people to gather and see each other and celebrate who they are as people, I think is just one of the most important functions of the festival. And then, as I said earlier, you know, it's great that we do that once a year, but what can we do throughout the year to empower?
Yeah.
So we've really tried to every month do some kind of social activity, and it might be a happy hour one month. We've done board games, we've talked about going bowling, and really just trying to get an idea of what the community wants in the way of social programming.
Yeah, wow, what a great way to give that community a voice and really empower them and just say, you know, we're here for you, we see you, we hear you, we hear your voice, and we're here. Yeah.
Yep.
And I feel like that's so important right now, especially in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as we were talking about before we started this interview, like, another thing that I think is important, like you said, word choice, for lack of a better way of saying it, like, instead of saying like husband or wife, say like partner, significant other, because it's such a more inclusive term,
exactly.
I guess is the way that I want to say that.
Yeah.
And it's so important to really be mindful of how you say those things and try to use the most inclusive and empowering language possible.
Right.
It's really an important thing, and it makes all the difference. Now, I know that that you mentioned before you started this interview that your first festival, you weren't necessarily running it or part of planning it,
right,
necessarily, but you did have a table there.
We did, yeah.
Can you kind of describe that and describe what kind of, like, feelings or energy you got from just the first festival, just being there, having a table there?
Yeah. So I was super proud of Hartford Community College. I work for Hartford Community College. And that first year, we came out as a presenting sponsor. So as a result, we had four tables that year. And we set up activities. And one of our goals was just to showcase all the great work that's happening at the college. You know, we were going to show our academic work and our commitment to diversity. And we had activities planned. And it was just so cool. Again, I was shocked at how many people came to the festival that year. We had no idea, you know, as we were setting up the table, if we were going to see 50 people that year or 500. And it was thousands of people who came out and stopped by and talked to us about what Hartford Community College had to offer to the community. Just great. It was like a positive electricity.
What an outpouring of support. Wow. So before we started, we were kind of talking about, I was talking to you about what stood out to you, like, from that first festival, or what stood out to you the most. And you really said, like, the artwork, some of the artwork that you saw really kind of stood out to you the most. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's, for me, it's the variety of artwork. I am not an artistic person. I appreciate art. I mean, I could do a stick figure. That's about where it begins and ends.
Yeah, me too.
There is an artist who does sketching on bones that just blew me away. I have seen people live producing work at the festival itself.
Live bones, like actual.
Oh, not live bones. I apologize. This was somebody who was doing a large scale painting.
And of a bone, or
no, it was just a painting. The bone artist was. They do one that's specifically around, like, they etch onto to bone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's only one person.
No, I'm like, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I would be hard pressed to find anybody. Yeah, I'd never heard of anybody etching on bone before, and I saw it and I was like, this is amazing. Only one of those. The other stuff was, you know, we have photographers come. We had crochet artists who were making these really elaborate crocheted pieces.
For example, one that you saw?
They had made it was a hanging sculpture. And I can't remember exactly what it was. It was sort of an abstract piece, but it was all made out of crocheted work.
Wow.
We have artists that come that are very young. I think the youngest artist we had was, I want to say, 9 years old last year.
That's incredible.
And their parents were just trying to encourage them to explore their art and their work and then showcase it for the community. And it was fun to see a young entrepreneur out there sharing their work.
Yeah, and especially at the young age of 9, just learning to find your voice and learning to say, this is who I am, and showcase yourself fearlessly. Yes. Like that is such an incredible thing to be able to do, especially at that young age, that you can inspire people to do the same. I can't imagine actually crocheting a whole, like, thing worth of, I can't imagine how much time that must have taken.
It looked like it took hours, and it was very elaborate. I don't know if they sold it. When you're planning a festival, you spend most of your day running around making sure that everything's going smoothly. I will also say, so that's the art that's happening at the exhibitor booths.
Mm-hmm.
The art that happens on stage is equally impressive and important to mention. We have drag performers coming from throughout the region to share their work and what they do to entertain, and also our musicians as well. We have some really amazing regional and local artists who are brave enough to get up on stage, something I don't love to do, but they are very, very good at it. So I'm excited about that.
Wow, so much talent and such a great platform. Good for you guys.
Yeah, and we love the backdrop too. I don't know if you've spent a lot of time in Havre de Grace, but our festival happens at Concord Point Lighthouse Park. So it's all on the backdrop of this beautiful waterside park.
With the lighthouses.
Yes.
And the water. Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous. Such a great venue to have. It's such a great platform, and it sounds like really a great community energy. Can you talk about the community response that you've seen?
Yeah, I think we see more people coming out every year to support us and just to participate. And it's interesting to me that we still have people who say that this is their first year coming. They didn't know we had a festival before, which as a planner is super disappointing, because I think that we are doing everything we can to share.
To get the word out.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But just a lot of positivity. I really do think that we offer something for everybody, whether mm-hmm. if you're there looking, just if you've just come out and you want information about what's going on in the community, if you are transitioning and you want information about healthcare services, those are available. If you've just come to watch drag performers, we've got you covered. If you love music, we've got you covered. So I think in that respect, like, the energy we're getting is that people are really resonating with the with what we're providing as far as entertainment and the mix of exhibitors we have. I will say we always hear that people want to see more artists, and we love when artists come and exhibit with us. So that's one thing that we're just going to continue to work on in the years ahead.
Well, it sounds like the overarching message is that it's definitely a safe place for people who need that safe place. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were talking about, you know, this community needs that safe place. And this sounds like it's one of the places that they can go to just be themselves and just kind of admire the artwork that everybody else is doing and just be a part of that community and have a good time. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of surprises you the most about, like, what you see at the festivals?
I'm surprised by the diversity of the audience that we draw. And most importantly, it's the diversity of age. You know, we see people who are seniors who are coming to participate in the festival, but we also see parents bringing teens who are starting to explore their identities and just want their kids to know that the community exists. And I love that. I think it's such a cool thing for a parent to do, to say, I accept you and I want to help you on your journey, whatever it is.
And I support you. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think another important thing too is how the community has kind of changed its view to learn to support that community. I think that's really important too. What would you like to see improve? Now that we've talked about what surprises you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I would love to see more artists coming and exhibiting with us, just so that we really have a true arts focus on the festival. I think, like I said, we do try to have something for everyone, but when you're getting a lot of feedback annually that we want to see more artists, then that to me is the drive.
What keeps you going.
It does. It does. And I'd really love to see how the festival can continue to springboard into other activities throughout the year. The energy is just so great at the festival, and I want to carry it. I want that to be an opportunity to carry something into the rest of the year.
To make it truly better for anyone.
Yeah.
And just be as inclusive and empowering as possible.
Exactly. I think, you know, you were talking about inclusive language earlier, and I really don't think most people intend to make an environment bad for other people.
I think the issue is maybe they don't know how, if I can suggest that. I don't think people understand how their language is impacting other people.
100%.
And that's one of the most important things. I think that's the first step. When I was in social work, I used to be a social work major before I came here, and that was one of the most important things that we talked about, was that you don't want to create barriers for clients. You don't want to create, you know, you want to watch, you know, what you say. You mm-hmm. want to watch the terms that you use, because you don't want to marginalize people. You don't want to make them feel like they're not safe. You don't want to make them feel like, oh, they can't be vulnerable. So using that inclusive language really makes all the difference, at least, yeah. I think
most people communicate with the intent of including everybody, and because we grew up in a society that is gender binary, mm-hmm. You know, you say something like, ladies and gentlemen, when you welcome a crowd of people, why not just say good afternoon, everyone? If somebody doesn't identify as a lady or a gentleman, they don't feel included in that conversation.
Right, and I think things are changing, and I think people are starting to, you know, kind of learn, like, oh, we can use more inclusive language. But I think the most important thing is that we teach people that there is more inclusive language that can be used right. to really make people feel welcome and make people feel like they're part of a community and to really make people feel seen and heard. And I think that's the most important thing more than anything.
Yeah. I think there can be a tendency for people to feel like when we suggest using inclusive language that we're demonizing the way things were done. And I think the real point is that we're just saying that there is perhaps an even better way to communicate what you're trying to convey.
Yeah. There is always room for improvement. Definitely.
I agree.
How can we help?
Well, this opportunity to talk about our festival is amazing. So I want to thank you for that. We're always looking for volunteers for the event. The event is from 2 to 6 p.m., but I will be down at Concord Point at 7 o'clock in the morning starting to set up, and we will be there until 7 o'clock at night.
Ooh, long day.
It is a long day, and we always get great volunteers, and we try to make the volunteer opportunities short because we want you to enjoy the festival and not be working the whole time. So even if somebody just wants to come and help for an hour with standing at the information booth, or if you can spare an hour when we're setting up and helping artists take their supplies from the curb to their booth, we welcome that. Our website is ucbpride.com, and we've got a great little window at the bottom. If you want to volunteer, you can just check a box and put your name and email address, and we'll get back together with you and find a place to plug you in.
Well, great. What else should we know? Let's finish off with this.
I just want to continue to praise Hartford Community College. I'm really excited that we are continuing to offer a booth. I don't fully know what the plan is, but last year they went all out and they had a gender-inclusive closet. They had acquired donations of clothing from the community, and they set up a closet, and anybody who wanted to just come and take clothing that more suited their gender identity, they were able to come and take that clothing.
Well, great. We'll leave it there. Kurt Doan, thank you so much for being here, and
thank you
so much for the work that you do for the LGBTQ community. Keep it up.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you today.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Owl's Nest podcast. I'm Renee Scuddy. To learn more or to listen to more of our other shows, you can visit whfc911.org. Thanks for listening.